Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay in the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Parcel on one piece, and you know, makes it a lot more manageable probably than the other. But asking Allison to work with the general counsel from the proposers firm and see if we can hammer out terms that the board can live with, and you know, actually maybe have a proposed contract.
So this is one of the kind of the interesting news item from last week, that there's somebody that's actually apparently right on the verge of being willing to buy a parcel on the northern portion of OLF 8 up against Frank Reeder Road. And this is Stephen Barry talking about this at the agenda review session prior to a slight conversation they had about it during the regular meeting yet on Thursday evening. Jeff Bergosh.
Yeah, I'm all for it, Stephen. But, you know, again, like I said, I think there's something to be said for how they plan to construct it and develop the site. You know, obviously we can't talk the names, but regardless of any franchise or brand you can think of, certain cities, certain locations, certain neighborhoods, those franchises have to conform to the zoning and sometimes overlays and master plans. That's why, you know, the Taco Bell that you see, you know, next to an interstate rest stop is going to look a lot different than the one that you see in a master planned community. The way the signage is, the way the construction's done. So I'm all for it. I've been briefed on it. I like it. I think it's great. But I'm concerned about what the building will look like.
The aesthetic part. Yeah.
There's a master plan. Yeah. It's been negotiated. We have to stick with it, particularly as it comes to this sort of a construction.
Now, he was very clear later on to say, I mean, it's not a Taco Bell. Otherwise, he wouldn't be talking about Taco Bell. But just using the example that, you know, you've seen Taco Bell, like on Cervantes, looks different from the Taco Bells that you see most places around. And, you know, they have a series of layers for what kind of visual appeal or visual presentation they are able to give to their local restaurants. And, you know, we talked about the Publix is another example of that. But Stephen Bear, for his part, says
the, you know, development is going to beget more development out there. I mean, that's going to, and there's, you know, there's also, I think, some holistic benefit to people seeing something actually happen, that, you know, the board does have the ability to move forward and close a deal. That's, you know, to be viewed in that manner, I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it also lends credibility to the conversation. I think the board's very willing to move forward and do a deal out there. We just need the right deal. We just need a good deal. You know,
that's a fact.
Yeah, the public, many of whom have come to the opinion that no deal will ever get through, or that they're shopping for something that either isn't available or is more personally desirable for whatever reason. I mean, there's all kinds of speculation about why it's been so hard to find something that works, whether it's you know, the commissioners themselves, or whether it's a lack of opportunities, or you know, or people aren't interested. I mean, who knows? This, and you know, Stephen Barry in an election year, I think, is saying to himself, you know, man, it'd be kind of nice to get a win for us in the election year. Jeff Bergosh, same concept, but
in the final piece on that, Stephen, after speaking with Brian and Danita at length about it, I certainly want it.
That's Brian and Danita are from Florida West. Okay, so that's who he's talking about there, the economic development arm.
They need a rectangle, but I want the rectangle to be north and south with a small part of frontage. I mean, obviously, what they wanted was, you know, essentially the entire frontage on Frank Reeder, but that's not something I could support.
And I don't think that's an issue based on some other conversations. I don't think that's going to be an issue. Which stands to reason. Why would it be? What do they? I mean, what really difference does it make, the orientation? But it makes a difference to us. makes a difference to the integrity of the parcel that's left.
Now, if you don't know the geography, Frank Reuter Road is the east-west road that runs on the north side of OLF 8. That's got, you know, north of that you've got Holmes, and then south of that you've got Navy Federal, and then south of, you know, and then to the west of that you've got the actual property that's waiting to be developed. So what he's saying is, you know, whatever this job-generating development will be, they wanted to just lay their building, you know, 25 acres east to west on the rectangle across Frank Reuter Road. And Jeff's like, I don't know. Let's just put it north, which makes sense because then you have more things that would have access to that road. And, you know, there's no reason to just put some giant construction thing right there laying that way. It makes more sense to use it elsewhere. So they talked about that was in the agenda review. Okay. So we got this big project potentially coming at a fairly good price. Brian Hilson mentioned just a moment ago, he is the CEO of Florida West.
Brian Hilson with Florida West Economic Development Alliance. And I'm here on behalf of what we call Project Dynamo. Project Dynamo is a proposed industrial facility for the northwest, extreme northwest corner of OLF 8, where it adjoins Frank Reuter. Quick description of the project, 110,000 square feet of new construction, a capital investment minimum of $35 million, 210 total workers, of which some are part-time, and the full-time equivalent we believe will be between 170 and 189 workers. Total capital investment I mentioned of $35 million, total payroll of at least 5.1, we believe between 5.1 and $5.6 million.
So that's a pretty significant project, and they're buying the land at a pretty nice price.
Very good proposed start to OLF 8, and what we're asking for tonight is your authorization that we continue working with the company. The company has offered $100,000 per acre for approximately 25 acres. We've got some work to do to configure the site, and this proposed development, as you would expect, would require some modification to the existing master plan in order to accommodate the dimensions of the rectangular site that they need.
So he kind of lays that in at the end, that they're going to need changes to the master plan, which of course means that we're going to get a long history recitation from Jeff Bergosh about the hard-fought compromises between his vision and the community's vision. And, oh my God, if I have to listen to him say it again, but he does every single time, which I also understand for people who are just listening for the first time and they don't know this history. But okay, he says, whoa, change the master plan. What do you mean?
I'm all for it, Steve. And look, I know the company and I'm excited, but you know, Brian, and you and I talked about this. We have a master plan that was negotiated. And so I'm concerned when I hear you say it's going to have to be, there's going to have to be a variation. I'd like to know more specifics because we made a deal with those residents and I intend to keep it.
Yeah. Can you just tell me the particulars of what changes to the master plan you have in mind?
I just want to know what precisely are you going to have to request to change in that master plan? It's very specific.
Jeff,
Wait. Jeff's asking the dude a question. And Stephen Barry is interjecting, like stopping the question. This is kind of weird.
I don't think Brian is going to be able, and he can certainly speak for himself, but I'm going to help him a little bit, given fact he's kind of new in our community, you know, less than a year. But I don't think he can specifically advocate for what changes would be necessary right now. If you might, you know, just maybe work with him offline, and obviously you've got, you know. I'm sure he's going to make himself and Danita available to you at your whim, given your proximity to the park.
Why couldn't Brian have said that? I don't know. It struck me as odd. Like, you know, Brian is the new CEO of Florida West under a year. He's right about that. And Jeff Bergosh is asking for, you know, what are the particulars of how the master plan might need to change to accommodate this Project Dynamo? And instead of letting Hilson answer and even saying, well, he can answer for himself, but then he doesn't. You know, Barry's like, well, you don't need to hear from him here in this public meeting. You can hear from him in private and he can explain it to you in private. And so you can learn what I don't know whether Stephen knows the answer to the question, just doesn't want it discussed in private, whether all of this is undecided yet, the changes to the master plan that would need to take place. It's an odd thing to say. Here, we got this thing we're working on, and we're not quite sure what's going to need to be done to make it turn out. But, of course, it's election year. We're trying to get a deal done because that'll look really good for us if we can go into the election year with something under our belt and say, look, we're not just waiting around for nothing. But don't talk about it in public. Now, I don't know why. I have no idea why. But I think it's weird that Stephen Berry, Commissioner District 5, is kind of telling Jeff Bergosh, a commissioner of District 1, what to do in his district, and seems to be telling him, and don't talk about it in public, you go get the information offline, because it's, I don't know, but it sort of hints like he's got it all under his belt, and I don't know. It was weird. You know, maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just trying to facilitate a project and avoid Brian Hilson saying something that he might regret in public, but I can't imagine what that would be, because he's the CEO. He knows what's going on. He can talk, but okay.
While they're going to be, you know, pretty available for you, Wes and Allison will be, you know, extremely available for you. So if you might just apprise yourself of, you know, kind of discussing it with Brian and Danita and Wes and Allison, and you know, we'll all three and then four when Lumen's back, we'll all kind of work through them to make sure that we can live with what's coming forward. And I agree with you. I mean,
that's also weird. Lumen was not there. Remember, we don't have a District 4, so Lumen is District 3, Lumen May. So there's three of them there. There was Mike Kohler, Jeff Bergosh, and Stephen Berry. And Stephen Berry says, go talk offline, go figure this out in private, not in public, and let's give it a minute. And then when, you know, when our ally, the three-vote block that represents Districts 1, 3, and 5, when we're all here, then we can, you know, do something on this, because I don't know why you got to wait for him to be involved in it. I mean, maybe it's just a courtesy to make sure that the, you know, fourth commissioner is there. Maybe it's a worry that Mike Kohler is going to vote no and they don't want to bring something up when they might run the risk of having somebody vote no and thwart it on a 2-to-1 vote because you can't get three. I don't know why this is happening, but it's just, and it might be nothing. I may be kind of a political hypochondriac here. I just, it struck me as odd. I'll get an unbiased view here in a second from John Pickens. We'll find out whether he thinks it sounds odd, but let's finish up the clips.
No, this is not a perfect example, but when you were talking about the Taco Bell this morning, I was thinking about the Publix that's on Cervantes.
12th Avenue. Yeah,
12th Avenue and Cervantes. It's much different than the Publix I have. I'm very happy that I even have a Publix in District 5, but it is different. And I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. And you know, I do think that those things are negotiable. And
again, what he's talking about is the visual presentation and the layout and, you know, things that would make it more of a fit for what's eventually going to be a very nice development, if it ever happens, on OLF-8, and not wanting to, you know, create anything that's going to interfere with that, whether for the people who might drive down Frank Reeder Road and access it from the back, or the residents of Frank Reeder Road or anything else, because, you know, here for years and years, they've driven out their roads that lead to their houses, their streets, and they've seen this wide open, beautiful field that they used to land helicopters on. And, you know, it's not the most amazing thing if they drive down and go on Frank Reeder Road to turn right to go out to Beulah, and then all of a sudden they discover there's some giant warehouse facing them. I mean, it's gonna be something like that, but can it not be a prettier version of that is the idea.
We're not going to, and I'm going to support you in this, we're not going to just do whatever it takes to get a deal done. Yeah. We're not going to do that. We're going to have put a good project on the ground, or we won't do one.
Yeah, no, so I appreciate that.
I understand what you're saying.
I appreciate that, Commissioner Berry. Right. So the motion you're looking for is to allow Wes and Allison continue to move forward?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so again, like, Stephen seems to be the guy running the show. You know, we're not going to let this happen. We're not going to, you know, do this or that. You know, and Jeff Bergosh is kind of just doing his bidding. So what it seems to me, okay, just, you know, reading it from the outside based on the tone is, oh, okay, so you want a motion for that. Chairmen typically don't produce motions. It typically comes from somebody else, and then they second it. Mike Kohler, for his part.
I just want one comment, you know, and I am in favor of this under the right conditions, obviously. I've been up here listening to this. This is all different deals for OLF. What you've said, this looks like something that actually could happen if we get the deal right. So I'm in complete support of this. Hopefully it works out. So if you want to make the motion, that's fine.
I make the motion that we move it forward. Yeah, absolutely. And let Wes and Allison negotiate and try and get the contract terms that we need.
And specifically Allison negotiating with general counsel from the other side.
Yeah, Allison negotiating with their general counsel. Yeah. That's the motion.
Super.
I'll second that.
All right, please vote. Item passes 3-0. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you,
Danita, for your work.
Yeah, so again, little things, because at the end, he's kind of telling him and to let him negotiate. Like, he's kind of, phrase it just this way, okay? Which came up earlier also when they were talking about a whole different project that had to do with an upzoning possibility that it's kind of complicated. I'll get into later in the show. Just again, Stephen Barry's kind of like, you know, okay, say it just this way and put this thing in there. And, you know, it rings odd to me. And again, maybe I just, you know, been around these guys too much and I've seen the way they operate. It's kind of like everything is suspicion generating. And, you know, maybe that's my own fault. So, John, you've heard the clips. You've heard me talking about it. Am I, again, political hypochondriac, or do you hear something weird there? Am I making it up? What do you think?
No, I really feel like you've got something there. I really do. You're not making this up.
Okay.
I've heard the clips and I've heard you and I'm like, yeah, that does.
It's just a little, kind of it's something, you know, the spider sense is tingling, and maybe it's for nothing. I don't have some reason why I can explain it. It just felt strange to me. So, okay, 524, but I'll say that, hey, if they put a 25-acre project on there and it employs a couple hundred people and it's, mm-hmm. you know, this $35 million investment and, you know, they buy the land and it's, you know, $2.5 million of purchase price for the land and they're going to make it pretty so that it's not offensive to the people who live north of Frank Reeder Road and we actually get something onto OLF 8. Even beginning maybe this year as far as the construction goes, it's great. I mean, who wouldn't be excited about that? Like, this is all win for everybody. So I just, you know, I feel weird raising questions about what seems to be a universal good thing. But, you know, there you go. You hear what you hear, you feel what you feel, and I guess you share what you share. 525 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Pizza's here.
Oh, great. I'd love some, but I'm worried about my stomach issues.
If you're worried about having diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools, it may not just be stomach issues. It could be a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on IdentifyEPI.com and talk to your doctor. That's IdentifyEPI.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
You choose, nope. Hunting, fishing, or drinking?
I'd really love to shoot a gun right now.
Fishing it is.
Good morning, 527. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, a mountain landslide has shut down a main road into Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I really only read this story because I love saying Jackson Hole, Wyoming. It's just a cool town.
You can still watch the camera, right? Isn't there a live video feed of like their intersection?
I think, you know,
for Jackson Hole,
sure.
I believe there is.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway,
but it was a section of State Road 22 there that winds through the mountains that caved in on Saturday. So they're still working on clearing that up for all of you folks headed to Jackson Hole.
Billionaire Central.
Soon. Absolutely.
Go see Foster Freeze. See if he's at home.
U.S. officials are now pushing Hamas to accept a ceasefire deal to end the fighting in Gaza. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan was on CBS's Face the Nation over the weekend. He said the deal would include a three-part plan to end the conflict and release hostages that are still being held by Hamas. And Apple is going to be showing off what they have in store for their product line today at the Worldwide Developers Conference. There's no word on exactly what they've got on the table this year, but they are expected to focus on integrating artificial intelligence into all of their software.
Can I make a prediction?
Sure.
Whatever it is, the Apple people will love it, and the Samsung people will hate it. Because it, it won't make any sense to us and it'll be hard to use. But the people who are inside the, let's just say fan base is a maybe nice way to say it. The people on the inside of the fan base will think it's the greatest thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right.
David, thanks so much for the update. 529 here on News Radio Pensacola. This is kind of an odd note. I don't really know what to make of this story, except I guess this is just sort of where we are in 2024. But TJ Maxx, along with Marshalls and Home Goods, I don't know what Home Goods is, but TJ Maxx and Marshalls, they are apparently going to, or are already, deploying body cameras onto their employees. Hmm. So, you know, first it was police, and now it's the employees at TJ Maxx in order to discourage shoplifting.
Really?
Which is such a problem for them that they just don't. I mean, they have the up in the sky, you know. Mm-hmm. If you look up, you see cameras everywhere.
You do.
Apparently, that's not good enough. So they feel like the losses that they're incurring from shoplifting are so high that this is the only thing that they can do. Diane Lyaskel, I don't know. Anyway, she is. She says shoplifting is happening all over. We need to stop it. TJ Maxx is one of the few, but it's not the only one. National Retail Federation reported last year 35% of retailers say they're researching body cameras for employees. So you could be walking into your Target or your Walmart or your Publix or your Starbucks or Chili's or whatever, and you know, you could
smile.
Yeah,
smile your own camera.
No, man. I mean, it's hard to make the argument this is much more of an invasion than already exists.
Right.
Everything is already on camera. But it does feel different when the person you're talking to is like, hi, and then the camera's like, hi. You know, everything's on camera.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Former President Trump's interviewed by probation officials in New York today, part of the process to determine his sentence for falsifying business records. He'll be home in Florida, back after a campaign rally in Las Vegas, where he announced a new proposal.
When I get to office, we are going to not charge taxes on tips, people making tips.
Six people were taken to a hospital for heat-related illness. It was more than 100 degrees out during the rally at a park in Las Vegas. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was asking his political rival Benny Gantz to return to the emergency war cabinet.
Gantz, a centrist member, resigned from the government yesterday over Netanyahu's handling of the war in Gaza. He was expected to step down on Saturday, but that plan was put on hold after the IDF rescued four Israeli hostages.
Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer, the Hamas-run Gaza health ministry, says at least 274 Palestinians were killed during that raid. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio Pensacola. Right now, we've got 78 degrees, clear skies across the area. We do start out with some breaking news out of Santa Rosa County. Officials there investigating a shooting in the Garcon Point area. Deputies were called to the 1,000 block of Adrian Way. This was at about 8 o'clock last night. They say a murder-suicide had taken place. Victims were located at the scene and were taken to a local hospital for treatment. Right now, there is no word on the number of victims or their conditions at this time. And officials do say, though, that that area there on Adrian Way is safe. They say there is no threat to the public, and we're anticipating more information on this later on today. Officials are closely monitoring the water in Walton County after shark attacks at a couple of beaches there last Friday. Three victims were taken to the hospital after the incidents in which one woman lost a hand. A teenager suffered flesh wounds. Walton County Beach officials say shark attacks are very rare. The last attack in Walton County was almost 19 years ago. Incidents did an aerial search over the waters there and said there was a notable presence of sharks, though, after those attacks. They said especially bull sharks. There were no shark-related incidents in either Santa Rosa or Escambia counties. A 22-year-old man arrested last Friday after a stabbing incident. Officials say Carson Farber has been charged with attempted murder, obstructing justice, and battery for an incident that happened in Escambia County at a home on 72nd Avenue. Deputies say Farber stabbed his partner during an altercation. Farber currently being held with no bond at the Escambia County Jail. Two people hurt last Friday when an ECAD bus pulled out in front of another vehicle and caused a crash. That happened at North L Street in West Jordan. The other vehicle hit the front of the bus, then ended up rolling into a front yard of a home nearby. The driver was taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. One passenger on the bus was also taken to the hospital with minor injuries. The bus driver, a Pensacola man, was cited for failing to yield to oncoming traffic. And fishing, of course, big all across the state of Florida. Well, a Pinellas County company now being recognized as the nation's best fishing charter. USA Today released its list of the 10 best fishing charters in the country, and Madeira Beach's Hubbard's Marina apparently ranked first on that national list. USA Today wrote that the marina is one of the top authorities for water-based recreation along the Gulf Coast. So congratulations to them. 534 at News Radio Pensacola. Right now we do have 78 degrees in Pensacola, 78 in Gulf Breeze, and 76 in Milton. Our next news at 6, we have breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio Pensacola, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Apple's annual Worldwide Developers Conference today is expected to herald the company's move into artificial intelligence. Apple's next generation of software is expected to be packed with an array of AI features, likely to make its virtual assistant, Siri, smarter and make photos, music, texting, and possibly even creating emojis on the fly a more productive and entertaining experience. Seriously overdue credit card debt is at its highest level in more than a decade, and people 35 and under are struggling more than any other age group. The share of credit card debt that's severely delinquent, defined as being more than 90 days overdue, rose to 10.7% during the first quarter of 2024, and that is according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. A year ago, just 8.2% of credit card debt was considered delinquent. Futures are slightly lower. Friday, the Dow Industrials lost 87 and the S&P 500 down 5. That's your money now.
Ew, what smells?
What is that? And the flies.
Is your home speaking to you?
If it is, I don't understand what it's saying. We need a translation.
Luckily, Lori and PJ at Davis Hardware and U-Haul can translate what your home is saying, and it could be clogged drains.
What should we do?
Go to Davis Hardware and U-Haul in Pensacola on L Street, near where North Base Boulevard and Fairfield Drive intersect, and pick up Drain King. It unclogs drains and will keep them unclogged if used periodically.
Davis Hardware and U-Haul, huh?
Your official home translator.
Thanks, Mr. Announcer. No more smell.
And no more flies.
Bands on the Beach, presented by the Santa Rosa Island Authority, every Tuesday night at 7 at the Gulfside Pavilion on Pensacola Beach. Bring a blanket or lawn chair and relax and enjoy the sunset with your favorite bands. This week, 1211 takes the stage.
To love me like I love on you.
Playing a mix of classic oldies, top 40, country, and hip-hop, 1211 is an energetic and dynamic pop R&B band. So grab your blanket or lawn chair and enjoy Bands on the Beach this Tuesday at 7.
Are you ready for a triple dose of wit, insight, and laughter? Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show from 11 to 2. Your daily dose of engaging conversation and hilarious banter. Join Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins as they tackle the biggest news stories, pop culture moments, and everything in between. They'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud from start to finish. Don't miss a minute of the fun. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show, 11 till 2 on News Radio Pensacola.
What do you need, son?
Need to borrow your boat.
Let's drop some lead on those motherfuckers!
Light them up.
They ain't gonna sink this battleship, no way.
Verify our range to target. One ping only.
What's the range now?
200 miles, sir.
They break 150 miles, launch the alert 5 aircraft.
Yes, sir.
What are you doing? You're slowing down! You're slowing down!
I'm bringing them in closer, Merlin.
You're gonna do what?
I got a good lock. Firing.
Good morning, 5:38
on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and yes, it is your Meet Your Tenant Commands segment, something I started doing about a month ago, and God, I can't believe we're already 4 weeks into this. That's so weird to think of. But anyway, where you get a chance to learn what happens on board NAS Pensacola and NAS Whiting Field and Corey Station. And so on Friday, we had a chance to talk to the Commodore of Training Air Wing 6 onboard NAS Pensacola. He is the Captain Doug White, call sign Cricket. Cricket, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thanks so much for having me here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Great to have you. Is this your first radio interview?
It is my first radio interview.
Yes! Yeah. I love it. Yep. See, can I, this is, as an aside, the whole point of doing this was, you know, the Blue Angels get a lot of attention, the museum gets a lot of attention, Village gets a lot of attention, the commanding officer of the base. I wanted to give all of the other operational units attention, and so that makes me excited every time I can get somebody on the air for the very first time to talk to our community. Before we get into what you do, you have kind of an interesting family story. You are definitely not the first person in the Navy in your family.
I am not, Andrew. I am a fourth generation Navy. It goes way back all the way to World War I with my great grandfather, fireman on the USS New York, and then my grandfather Hugh, who was on the USS Pennsylvania in World War II. My dad, airframer on F-8s and VF-111, the Sundowners, pretty famous Navy squadron in Vietnam, and most of my uncles as well. Aviation in the Navy. And
wow.
So I grew up with all these stories about the Navy at basically every family function. They all did one enlistment and got out, except for my one uncle, who's a retired chief petty officer. And so I always thought to myself, well, geez, guys, you talk about this like it was the best time of your life. Maybe I should look into that as well.
That's great. So did your grandfather or your great-grandfather have a chance to know you as a captain, as a Commodore?
Unfortunately, no. My great-grandfather passed away when I was about a year and a half old.
Okay.
My grandfather passed away when I was in high school. He did know that I got an appointment to the Naval Academy.
Okay. But the rest of your family, I assume it's kind of, you know, a little weird for them that you're this guy now, the guy they used to always salute, right?
Yeah. It's of course they're proud of me, but
yeah.
I tend to try to remember where I came from.
That's always important. All right, so let's explain to people what you do. You're the Commodore of the wing, and you have, by my count, you have four and a half units that operate underneath what you do, but it's all training, most of which is related to what civilians might call backseaters, naval flight officers. If you think Top Gun, Goose.
Right.
Okay, you guys train the gooses of the Navy and the Marines, right?
That is correct. You know, it's a common misconception, and that's usually the example I give to folks when I tell them, hey, I'm a naval flight officer. Their normal reply is, oh, but Goose dies, which is obviously not part
away.
Of the plan. Yes, that's true. He did die in the movie. But what we really do, what a naval flight officer really is they are a specialist in the mission of the aircraft that they are assigned in. So they are, you know, if they're a TAC air, tactical air, fast jet, naval flight officer, they'll have a name. So in the Growler, the aircraft that I flew, I was an electronic warfare officer.
That's the F-18 that is electronic attack.
That's right. Suppression of enemy air defenses. Mm-hmm. So we clear out the defenses so that the strike aircraft, the F-18Es and F models, can go in and drop their bombs. And so if you're in an F model Super Hornet, you are an expert in the weapons that aircraft carries. You do all the weaponeering for the mission. To make sure that you get the correct effects on target. In the other big wing platforms, you are an expert in the mission of that aircraft. So if you are a naval flight officer, let's say at an E-6 TACAMO, which is the nuclear command and control aircraft, you know, your entire purpose in life is to make sure that those messages make it out.
So, and, you know, if you're working on like a Poseidon, you know, you're going to be anti-sub, so you're deploying the sonar buoys. Because in each plane that has this kind of need, you're going to have the pilot who's responsible primarily for flying the plane,
right.
And then you have the naval flight officer who is responsible for the operation of the weapons and or detection and or jamming and or whatever the other purpose of delivering that plane on target. The NFO is responsible for that slice.
That's right, and many times the naval flight officer is the overall mission commander.
Okay.
For the mission. So it has nothing to do with controlling the aircraft and everything to do with your amount of expertise in the mission area.
And you train how many a year?
Somewhere between 250 and 300. It varies slightly year to year just based on the needs of the Navy. But yeah, that's about what we put out, which is interesting because that's the same, roughly the same number of jet pilots that the Navy makes every year.
Okay. So one thing is that people may not realize this, and this is why we're doing the series, is like you mentioned the F-18. The F-18, the A and B was the legacy Hornet. The A was the one-seater. The B was the two-seater. C, D, E, F, these are all two-seat configure, or these are all the Super Hornet configurations. The C and the E are the single seat. The D and the F are the two-seat configuration. Why don't they all have two?
Well, that's probably a longer answer.
Okay,
all right, I'm not privy to all the details with acquisition. I did do a tour in a test squadron, but who really knows why they ordered them the way that they did?
Okay,
I will tell you that the two-seat platforms allow a much higher level of division of labor inside the cockpit, right? So the E and the F have the same mission, but it doesn't take much thought to realize that if you got two people doing the same mission, obviously folks can specialize, they can divide their attention, and you're going to get a, in theory, higher level of performance out of the aircraft.
Okay, and fair enough, because, you know, some platforms like the F-35 is only a single person, and then, you know, things like the Prowler and the Poseidon, they're only multiple people, so they don't have a single pilot mission, and so it's just kind of interesting to me that the F-18 does have that kind of split nature to it, and you know, you don't train the front seaters, you train the back seaters. We're going to come back to this in a second because we've just scratched the surface, but it's going to get pretty interesting here in a second. We're talking to Captain Doug White. He is call sign Cricket, the Commodore of Training Wing 6 on board NAS Pensacola. Back to Cricket. Okay, so training Air Wing 6 on board NAS Pensacola. By my count, you use two different aircraft and then training, you know, simulators.
That's correct.
You have three squadrons. Training Squadron 4 is the Warbucks. And this is training who?
So I'll back it up to you this way. We'll just do it chronologically.
Oh, okay, fair
enough. Comes into the training pipeline. So a couple of weeks ago, you had Redman on. Redman runs Schools Command. That's where the indoctrination part that everybody gets the same level-based load of learning, whether you're a
naval
pilot.
Introductory flight evaluation knife.
That's right. From there, if you're a naval flight officer, you're going to come over to Training Wing 6. You stay in Pensacola the entire time. We are unique in that. All the other jobs in the Navy. If you're a student naval aviator, you're going to bounce around.
They might go to Whiting, they might go to Corpus, whatever, or they might come back to Whiting for Halos or Meridian. Okay, but
that's right.
But if they're going to do NFO, they're staying here.
They're staying here in Pensacola. So everybody comes into VT-10, the Wildcats. That is our primary squadron. They fly the T-6 Texan II made by Beechcraft. So it's the propeller plane that you see flying around. It is 1,100 horsepower. It is essentially a early World War II fire in terms of performance. 7Gs, very powerful, nimble aircraft. They use that to learn the basics of aviation, so aviating, navigating, and communicating, so talking on the radios, learn how to get from A to B, and co-piloting skills. After primary is when...
And just so people have been listening to this whole series, if they're learning how to fly the front seat pilot role, they'd be at Whiting. Or somewhere, or Corpus. If they're learning the backseat role, they'd be with you, where they have instructor pilots in the front seat.
That's right.
Who are themselves either current or former naval aviator pilots training the backseaters. Right?
That's right. That's right. We have all active duty pilots down here at Training Wing 6. Some of the other training wings do have contractors that fly with them.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, the first few flights that they do in the T-6, they are in the front seat flying the aircraft.
Oh, okay. Yep. See, I didn't know that. Yep. I'm glad I asked.
No better way to learn how to swim than to just see what it jump is. Into the deep end of the pool.
Okay.
So that's what we do to give them appreciation for what the pilot is doing and the task loading on them. And then from there, we move them to the backseat in later flights as they get deeper into the navigation.
Okay. So in the pipeline, they go to learn primary NFO, then they do advanced NFO.
Yep. So actually,
because there's a selection, right?
Yep. There's a selection after primary. And after that, that's when they get sorted.
That's right. Between the sorting hat of the sorting hat of jets or big wing or whatever.
Yeah,
right.
So the two pipelines after that are essentially big wing or jets. And if you get jets, you stay in VT-10. You do an intermediate where you learn formation flying, tactical maneuvering with multiple aircraft. If you
and now you're on the Goshawk. You're the T-40.
No, you're still in T-6s.
Oh, okay.
But you're just adding in more T-6s flying together. And then from there, after you complete intermediate in VT-10, you go on to VT-86 flying the T-45.
Got it.
Over on the other side of the house, If you select big wing, you're going to go to VT4. You're going to do a core intermediate phase. They have a system of simulators that allows them to reconfigure based on platform. So everybody gets the same core, and then they select at the end of intermediate into their individual platform, either P-8s, the Poseidon aircraft that we talked about, the E-6 TACAMO that we talked about, or the E-2C Hawkeye, which does airborne early warning.
That's, I call it the brain plane, the one with the big dome.
The brain plane. Yeah. It is the quarterback of the fleet.
So they go through this selection and they either stay in 10 and learn the intermediate for on the Texan and then eventually go to 4 for the T-45, or they go to the trainers and they learn on simulators how to work with big wing, where they would eventually go to a fleet replacement squadron.
Absolutely.
And learn their particular platform and then actually go out into the fleet.
That's right. So at the end of the road here in Pensacola are the wings of gold, as we say. So we have one winging every month, and then from there they will go to their individual fleet replacement squadron based on what platform they selected.
So if I look up in the air,
yes,
and I see the white body with the orange wingtips accented, it could be that it's one of your planes where they're learning how to be backseaters. It could be that it's one of Fez's planes from Whiting that they're learning how to be front seaters. But it is going to be one of those two things.
Yes. If it's a jet,
if it's a
mine.
T-45, yeah. Then it's loud.
It's mine.
Then it's going to be yours only because that's learning how to be a backseater in the jet so that they can go off and become growler pilots, presumably mostly.
Growler EOs or Super Hornet Wizzos, weapon systems officers.
All right. So what about, there's another program that you do, though, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it yet, but it's an important one because you have the drone training.
That's right.
Under your command.
That's right. And this is a new program that we are just standing up right now. Right now it is just a detachment that is under the wing, under the auspices of the wing. But we will we've already winged about 10 air vehicle pilots. So this is the Navy's foray into autonomous platforms.
Okay.
So these individuals are the ones that will operate the MQ-25 Stingray, which is the new large drone that will fly on aircraft carriers to take over the tanking mission.
Will we start seeing these big,
unfortunately not,
big drones over Pensacola?
I'm a fan of aviation, obviously. So we train those folks on a system called Vigilant Spirit, which is essentially a ground control station.
Oh.
So it looks very much like what they'll see in a fleet. Unfortunately, we will not have any of the actual
All right.
platforms here.
Fine.
I know.
Whatever. But also worth noting, you do have a German Air Force training squadron that operates under you, right?
That's correct. 2nd German Air Force squadron. So that is in a midst of kind of reinvention at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Germany, we're currently training the last German TAC Air weapon systems officer.
Oh, okay.
So he will wing next year after that. We do also train some of their folks in a system that they have on helicopters. So the mission is not going away. It's just getting slightly smaller, and they're looking at recombining some of their efforts that they have at other training bases.
Do you have Coast Guardsmen come through your
training?
FNOs? No, I mean, I don't know what the equivalent would be, but there isn't anybody like that that you train
for the Coast Guard? No, not for the Coast Guard, no.
And then just so people kind of put all the pieces together a little bit, you guys report to Chief of Naval Air Training, SNATRA.
That's
is
correct.
the acronym for that. Part of what happens within your command, though, is that you are a landlord for a relatively well-known operational unit in the Navy called the Blue Angels.
That's correct.
You don't command the Blue Angels. You don't oversee the Blue Angels.
Nope.
But you do provide their apartment.
That's right. They're kind of like a roommate, really.
Yeah.
The hangar that we have two hangars out at the flight line that we operate out of, and one of them they occupy the corner of the hangar. So it's like having a roommate that's gone a lot on the weekends working, and we just make sure that nobody left the water on, and we turn the lights off for them and stuff like that. But Boss Armitas, I've known him for many, many years. He and I were at the academy together. Fantastic.
Oh, that's
great.
How many planes do you oversee?
I have 21 T-45s. And
that's the Goshawk.
That's the loud
white plane with the orange wingtips.
43 T-6 Alphas.
Okay. And then last question is, maybe not last, but I always find more stuff. You're changing the color scheme. Is that right, that your planes are starting to adopt a different color scheme?
That's right. So Sinatra as a whole, as you know, every aircraft has to be repainted at some point. So they have started a new program that as the aircraft go in to get repainted, they will come back out in a low visibility gray color scheme. So to get ahead of that and also to honor, I guess, one of our heroes in the naval flight officer community, Willie Driscoll, who is the only naval flight officer ace out there from Vietnam. We are currently having one of our T-45s painted as an homage to his MiG killer F-4 from Vietnam,
nice.
From VF-96.
I love it. Also, just a quick note, you said that your front seat pilots are all current active duty.
That's correct.
But I've known some people who, for example, Blue Angels pilots who retire, or maybe they stay in and I'm mistaken, but they transition over to being instructor pilots for you.
So,
and not just them, but I mean, like, generally from the fleet. You have all kinds of people that are working for
absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. The other training air wings do have several contract pilots
okay.
That they have to help out with the
but you as all active duty.
That's correct.
Okay. And then one last quick thing is, for people who are really paying attention, they know that the Navy and the entire military is transitioning over to the F-35, a combined, you know, there will come a time when we don't order F-18s anymore. Okay. That's not going to be for a while, but still, that's a single seat only. And so people might wonder, does transition to the F-35 mean that the Naval Flight Officer training Air Wing 6, operation command necessity is going away? And the answer is?
Absolutely not. We will be here for many, many more years to come. I think the best way to look at it is the F-35 is one aircraft in the tactical air arm of the Navy. We still have all those big wing platforms that I spoke mm-hmm. of that mm-hmm. will require NFOs for many years to come. And we still have the Growler, and the Growler will always require a backseater. And with the growth in air vehicle pilot training that we're doing here, I expect that to come up and be something in the future here.
Yeah, that AVP or drone pilot is obviously that is a never-increasing mission for the Navy. And the fact that we are acquiring and have that in-house and it's growing from its sort of nascent stage into whatever it's going to be in the future, that we have that here already means that for people who might be worried about size of mission and role of training Air Wing 6 in the military ongoing for NAS Pensacola, it's not going anywhere because of that mission in particular and other things. One last, this is just a detail thing, but sometimes it helps to understand. VT means
fixed wing. The
V
means
fixed wing
mm-hmm. and the T means training.
As opposed to at Whiting, you might have
HT
for helicopter.
That's right.
See, these acronyms aren't that hard to figure out.
Yeah, well, now why fixed wing is V, I don't know.
But it is.
It is.
Yeah. And that's all you need
it's
to know.
It's a mystery.
Captain Doug White, call sign Cricket, Commodore Training Air Wing 6. Cricket, you did great. Thank you so much for training our naval flight officers. Thank you so much for teaching us what you do and for helping us understand your mission. And the better we understand it, the more we can support it and be excited about it and know what we're talking about when we talk to people about what the Navy does here.
Thanks so much. We're very appreciative of the community here.
Absolutely. 5:56 here on News Radio Pensacola. By the way, one thing I said wrong in the interview I got corrected on later is that the regular Hornet, the Legacy Hornet, is A through D. The Super is E through F. And then the G, the Growler, is a Super Hornet variant. So just if you're kind of listening to that, you're like, well, that doesn't sound right. Okay, yeah, exactly. So the A is a single, the B is a double seat. The C is a single, the D is a double seat. The E is a single, the F is the double seat, and the Growler is a double seat. So for those of you who care, just wanted to make sure I got that clarified. Hey, if you're thinking about that next vehicle that will not be an F-18, go to Frontier Motors. This is something you can actually acquire. Go to Frontier Motors and check out their amazing selection of good quality used cars. Almost new, 1, 2, 3 years young, low miles, great condition, good prices. They take care of you. If God forbid, there's anything with the car you discover later, they take care of you for that too. I mean, they will proactively check up with you after you buy a vehicle to make sure it's good. Because that's the kind of service that they want you to expect. That's the kind of quality product that they stand behind. I know because they did that with us. And then there's like one of the keys didn't work. And they fixed it a year after I bought the car, which is amazing for a used car dealer. You know, most used cars like, get them out of there. No, they want to take care of you and make sure that you're satisfied. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years. Behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Hi, I'm Terrence A. Gross. As many of you know, I am a local board-certified personal injury lawyer, and I have practiced in this community for almost 40 years. Our law firm handles only people that have been injured due to the negligence of another. Join me this Wednesday at 10:30 on Pep Talk as we discuss all aspects of personal injury law.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
As a business owner, you have a lot on your plate, from managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, helping with COVID employee retention credits, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and their HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Avalon HR, employing made easy.
Pensacola right now with Joe and Austin.
It's like headline news for radio. Every day, 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
You can fool around with whoever you want to, just not a treble.
That's not going to be easy. He's a hunter.
You call it a dude?
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Good morning, 5:59 here on News Radio Pensacola. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with a couple of headlines, or at least one, David. Go ahead.
Well, looks like the White House is getting ready for a big Juneteenth concert they're going to be holding on the South Lawn. They're going to have several artists, including Patti LaBelle, Gladys Knight, Patina Miller, and more.
Are they doing it on Juneteenth? Because I know our local, like the Wahoos, are doing a thing on the 19th. Do you know if it's on the 14th itself?
I believe it's today, actually.
Oh, today. Oh, early.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.